print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Corrine, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the August 24th, 2026 issue of the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Thank you for joining us today. The highlights under business and finance are: NVIDIA plans to use a $6 billion deal it struck last week to build one of the world's most powerful open weight AI models, which would compete with Chinese offerings like DeepSeek and Kimi. Investors will be paying close attention to Jensen Huang's comments at NVIDIA's earnings call on Wednesday, looking for clues to the future of artificial intelligence. California's Attorney General is expected to ask Paramount to divest itself of some cable channels and commit to keeping its movie studio separate from Warner Brothers before he approves their merger. A lieutenant of Mark Walter played a key role in striking the financial deals in the Dodgers owner's business empire that have drawn scrutiny from federal investigators. United Auto Workers members voted down an offer from Deere to extend its contract with the union by 2 years, setting up what will likely be a contentious negotiation for a new contract next year. OpenAI took a break from training new artificial intelligence models, saying it needed time to revamp security measures for risky sandbox trial runs. Walmart this week plans to introduce a new store brand of women's clothing, bags, and other accessories, Scenario, as part of its push to appeal to younger, trendier shoppers. Boeing engineers and technical workers rejected the jet maker's proposal for 4-year collective bargaining agreements and authorized a strike until their concerns are addressed. Now for the key articles under the Worldwide section. The U.S. and Canada swerved into what could become a new and acrimonious trade war after talks collapsed over what each side said were new, last-minute demands by the other. Russian military officers flew to Kaliningrad to oversee readiness planning for a potential mobilization of the enclave's residents, one of many such exercises being carried out nationwide. Iran's top politicians said the country needs to focus on ending the war and shoring up its crippled economy, pushing back against more defiant hardliners. Trump's investment accounts continue to actively trade individual stocks in June, revealing they made more than 1,000 transactions, according to his latest government disclosure. Lawmakers in several states are moving to crack down on ghost job advertising posted by employers who have no intention of filling the supposed opening. More British school leavers are skipping enrollment in top universities and opting instead to take up white-collar apprenticeships in fields such as consulting, finance, and law. A federal judge in New York vacated a Trump administration policy that suspended the processing of visas from 75 countries whose nationals Washington deemed likely to require public assistance in the U.S. Died Nancy Castlebaum Baker, 94, former U.S. Senator of Kansas. The picture on today's front page takes place in a mountainous terrain area where in the background smoke is billowing into the sky. And that caption reads, "Fast moving." Some 90,000 people were told to evacuate as a wildfire advanced on the outskirts of Reno, Nevada on Sunday. Authorities said the Hawk Fire, which began Saturday and quickly grew to 23 square miles, was human-caused and uncontained. And the headline, Reno on Edge as Fire Spreads in Nevada. The article, Nevada Wildfire Nears Reno Prompting Evacuations, by Elisa Luckpacht. A fast-moving wildfire was approaching Reno, Nevada Sunday, with authorities urging nearly 90,000 people to evacuate. The Hawk Fire started Saturday near a hiking trail northwest of the city and had burned more than 10,000 acres, authorities said Sunday morning. The fire hadn't reached the city proper, but the county sheriff said the blaze was moving into more urban areas. Authorities said the fire was caused by humans, though they were still determining exactly how it started. As of Sunday morning, they said the fire was zero contained. At least six people, including three first responders, had been injured, officials said. Other articles from the front page follow. NVIDIA strikes $6 billion deal to take on China heavyweights, by Robbie Wayland. NVIDIA plans to use a $6 billion deal it struck last week to build one of the world's most powerful open-weight AI models, one that would compete with Chinese heavyweights like DeepSeek and Kimi K3, according to people familiar with the matter. The chip giant's licensing deal with the AI startup Poolside is also set to present a direct challenge to frontier U.S. AI companies, including OpenAI and Anthropic, since open-weight models are generally far cheaper to operate and allow easy customization. Although NVIDIA counts big labs like OpenAI and Anthropic as some of its closest partners, the move reflects Chief Executive Jensen Huang's efforts to position NVIDIA for success in multiple AI backgrounds simultaneously, ensuring the company is able to hold on to its dominant market position. Poolside, which was founded in 2023 by Isel Kant, a software developer, and Jason Warner, the former chief technology officer of GitHub, sent a letter to shareholders Thursday announcing a dramatic restructuring of its business. NVIDIA will invest $1 billion in the company at a pre-money valuation of $12 billion and, more significantly, will pay $6 billion to license Poolside's technology and hire the bulk of its engineers, according to a copy of the letter reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. Poolside's founders wrote that the NVIDIA deal was meant to secure a future where artificial general intelligence or human-like computer reasoning would not be a closed technology controlled by a few, but one built by many out in the open. The startup's leadership, including Kant, Warner, and operations executive Margarita Garcia, won't join NVIDIA and will continue working on unspecified research project. The deal was reported earlier by Newcomer, an independent tech newsletter. U.S.-Canada spiral toward trade war. Carney responds to new tariffs with levies on U.S., saying, "We got attacked," by Amanda Coletta and Gavin Bade. The U.S. and Canada over the weekend swerved into what could become a new and acrimonious trade war. After weeks of marathon talks between trade officials, an agreement was near until the talks collapsed in Friday's waning hours, sending U.S.-Canada relations into a tailspin and renewing questions about the future of the three-nation North American agreement. Early last week, less than 2 hours before a slate of new U.S. levies on Canadian goods were to go into effect, President Trump announced a deal on social media and a three-day delay to give officials time to complete the details. However, shortly after 11:30 p.m. Friday, U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer said Canada walked away from the table and had made new demands without specifying what those were. As a result, tariffs of 50% on $20 billion of Canadian goods, or about 5% of its U.S.-bound exports, went into effect after midnight. The two sides blamed each other for the collapse in a trading relationship that involves $900 billion a year. On Saturday, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney said the tariffs constituted an attack on Canada. "You're at war when you get attacked," he told reporters, "and we got attacked." He said Canadian officials worked in good faith on a deal, but that the U.S. proposed new terms that were unfair, compromised Canada's sovereignty, and revealed the limits of U.S. commitments to a true economic partnership. Canada, he added, would slap dollar-for-dollar counter tariffs on U.S. goods such as steel, dairy, and appliances on September 8th. "Last spring, I warned that America is trying to break us so they can own us, and I promise that that will never, ever happen," Carney said. "We are keeping that promise. Canada is becoming stronger and less dependent on America." Early Sunday morning, Trump wrote on social media that American farmers had been charged massive amounts of tariffs by Canada, which he said wants the benefits of being a state without being one. Greer said Canada rejected a deal that he said offered it the best treatment of any major exporter to our market. He repeated an oft-made complaint of the Trump administration that the U.S.'s northern neighbor is among a handful of countries that have retaliated against the president's tariffs. The dispute could further unravel already deteriorating ties between the neighbors. Since returning to the White House, Trump has imposed tariffs on Canadian goods, repeatedly questioned Canada's viability as a country and threatened to make it the 51st state. The threats and economic aggression have infuriated Canadians who've boycotted U.S. travel and goods. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Readiness Tests Tee Up New Russia Mobilization by Thomas Grove and Alexander Ward. Last month, Russian military officers flew from St. Petersburg to the country's Kaliningrad enclave, nestled between two NATO countries and the Baltic Sea. There, the officers oversaw readiness planning and procedures for a mobilization of the region's residents, with details on how to house, feed, and arm them, said Western intelligence officials. The planning exercise in Kaliningrad is just one of many being carried out nationwide, said the officials, in case the call is made. The Kremlin hasn't yet made a decision to follow through on any such move, those officials say, and likely won't until after parliamentary elections in late September. But Russian leader Vladimir Putin's determination to take all of eastern Ukraine's Donbass region, despite tiny and costly advances, may force his hand. In recent months, Moscow has failed to recruit enough new soldiers to make up for those killed and injured on the battlefield. While Ukrainian drone advances have reduced the average Russian soldier's lifespan on the front to a matter of minutes, days, or weeks, those problems in manpower may leave Putin with no choice other than to order a new wave of mobilization not seen in years, U.S. and European officials said. Neither the Kremlin nor the Russian Defense Ministry responded to request for comment. Kaliningrad, the site of the mobilization test exercise last month, has come under increased scrutiny recently, as Western intelligence officials have warned it could play a role in Moscow's military planning. Russia, they say, in a potential escalation with the West, could seize part of the adjacent Suwalki Gap, a strip of land that runs from Kaliningrad to Belarus, Russia's ally, through neighboring Poland and Lithuania. Russia has long seen Kaliningrad's geographic location and tiny population as a vulnerability, as well as a useful foothold in Europe. Captured by the Soviet Union from Germany in 1945, it long served as Russia's only ice-free port on the Baltic. Moscow has, at times, carried out military exercises there as a deterrent to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Allied countries have also responded, and in the past week carried out a planned air exercise near the Russian enclave, using U.S. and Norwegian fighter aircraft and Polish ground forces. Now, rumors of an impending mobilization have caused jitters in Russia, with men looking online for ways to exit the country in a pinch. Whiskey bus stokes rebellion in storied Kentucky family. Scathing letter from two members of the family that controls Brown Foreman accuses board of rewarding failure by Laura Cooper, Louisville, Kentucky. Each summer, the heirs to one of America's biggest liquor fortunes gather in the heart of Bourbon Country for a family picnic. This year, there was much to discuss and little to celebrate. Profits are shrinking at Brown-Forman, and people are drinking less of its flagship Jack Daniel's whiskey. The CEO is leaving. Shares in the spirits giant have shrunk in value by 60% over the past 5 years amid a record-setting stock market rally. Talks to merge with a competitor fell apart in the spring, and a cross-town rival has made a $15 billion hostile takeover bid. The troubles have opened a rift within the extended family that for more than 150 years has controlled Brown-Forman, amassing a collective wealth that Forbes put at $11 billion. Brown family members have used their fortunes to buy horse farms, collect art, and amass a weapons collection, including Buffalo Bill's rifle, now displayed at a local museum. They are akin to royalty in their hometown of Louisville. Shortly before the family's July picnic, two of the heirs sent a scathing 7-page letter to more than 130 of their relatives. Their company was in crisis, and management had enriched itself despite a failing strategy, they wrote, accusing the board and other family members of keeping them in the dark about merger discussions. The numbers are stark and undeniable, said the July 10th letter, which was reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. Brown-Forman stock price has fallen from the mid-$70 per share to the mid-$20 per share over the past 3 years, eliminating billions of dollars of generational wealth for the Brown family and all other shareholders. The dispute is playing out against a difficult market for liquor, especially the whiskey and bourbons that are Brown-Forman's flagship products. Americans are drinking less, with a Gallup poll recently notching the lowest percentage of drinkers in the nearly 90-year run of the survey. They are pinching pennies in an inflationary environment, choosing ready-to-drink canned cocktails instead of straight whiskey, and using cannabis and the THC drinks. Leaving the front page, NVIDIA results seen as AI test by David Uberti and Crystal Herr. Chip makers are fighting to assure investors the artificial intelligence boom is racing forward. Wall Street might not believe it until NVIDIA's Jensen Huang says so. When Huang steps up to the mic for his company's earnings call Wednesday, he will have the world's attention. What he says about NVIDIA's present will preview the future of AI, dictate the path forward for a tech-crazed stock market, and influence an American economy increasingly tethered to hopes that the boom won't go bust. The $5 trillion chipmaker has provided the key building blocks for AI since the launch of ChatGPT in 2022, set off a race for dominance among OpenAI, Anthropic, and established Silicon Valley giants. Now, as NVIDIA backstops sprawling data center projects and an exotic money pipeline to boost chip demand, the company's influence is arguably bigger than ever. But there are signs of looming trouble. Political pushback to AI is growing. A bond sell-off propelled borrowing costs to their highest level in years. The hyperscalers that include some of NVIDIA's key customers, once cash printing machines, are relying more on debt. OpenAI recently told investors its revenue rose by a tepid 18% in the second quarter, while its losses deepened. After watching shares of other chip makers and the so-called Magnificent Seven tech companies swing wildly in recent months, Wall Street is hoping NVIDIA can beat expectations again. Inside tech's frantic race to quell the growing public backlash to AI by Isabella Simonetti and Megan Brabowski. In July, about 1,000 Georgia residents gathered at the Effingham County College and Career Academy to hear about what OpenAI could do for them. A day earlier, the artificial intelligence company had announced plans to build a new data center in the area near Savannah. The event was billed as an open house where concerned locals could get their questions answered. On their way in, attendees filed past protesters holding signs that read, "I didn't vote for AI," and "You can't drink data." Inside, OpenAI employees staffed booths offering information about the planned data center. There were QR codes linking to a job board, along with posters showing what the facility might look like. There was a taco bar. There was also richer fare on offer. In announcing the project, the company pledged to invest $80 million in the community and provide as much as $71 million in coding credits to local students. Chris Lehane, OpenAI's Chief Global Affairs Officer, said hosting an open house was an important piece of winning community buy-in. People really do want to know, like, are my electricity bills going to go up or not? Is this going to impact my water supply? Am I going to pay more or less in taxes? Open houses, multi-million dollar community pledges, free tacos, none of that used to be the norm for an industry that could rely on speed, confidentiality, and political connections to get gigantic computing facilities approved and built on favorable terms. That is rapidly changing in the face of a volcanic grassroots backlash that threatens the foundations of the AI boom. Boeing engineers reject four-year contract. Members vote to allow the union's negotiation team to authorize a strike. The union represents about 17,000 aerospace professionals. By Kelly Clunan. Boeing engineers and technical workers rejected the jet maker's proposal for four-year collective bargaining agreements. The Society of Professional Engineering Employees in Aerospace said on Friday that its members also voted to allow the union's negotiation team to authorize a strike until its concerns are addressed. The organization is Boeing's biggest white-collar union, representing about 17,000 aerospace professionals across a professional unit made up of engineers and scientists, as well as a technical unit with technicians, analysts, and planners. About 64% of the engineering unit and 72% of the technical unit voted to reject the contract offer. The union's negotiating team had endorsed the offer, which provides for wage increases, it said, could compound to about 32% over the length of the contract. Judge blocks policy that halted visas. A federal judge in New York has vacated a Trump administration policy that suspended the processing of visas from 75 countries, including Afghanistan, Iran, Russia, and Somalia, whose nationals the Trump administration deemed likely to require public assistance in the U.S. U.S. District Judge Jeanette Vargas, an appointee of former President Joe Biden, set aside the policy Friday as contrary to law and in excess of statutory authority. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the editorial page, The Dumbest Trade War Revisited. Escalating a tariff brawl with Canada makes no economic or political sense. President Trump took exception last year when we called his tariffs against Canada and Mexico the dumbest trade war in history. It got dumber this weekend as Mr. Trump escalated with another round of border taxes on Canadian imports a mere 10 weeks before midterm elections. Mr. Trump issued his latest tariff threat against Canada last month under Section 338 of the 1930 Tariff Act. The law lets the president impose tariffs up to 50% on countries that discriminate against commerce of the United States directly or indirectly in relation to foreign countries. No previous president has used this power. Mr. Trump set a deadline of midnight on Friday for Canada to reach a deal to avert 50% tariffs on $20 million of goods. The countries were close to an agreement until, poof, the ceasefire blew up at the last minute, with each side blaming the other. The result? Mr. Trump's threatened tariffs took effect Saturday morning. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney threatened to retaliate dollar for dollar starting September 8th. Both sides could still walk back from the ledge, though Mr. Trump's escalation could make this harder for Mr. Carney politically, since Canadians don't like being bullied by Washington. To justify his new tariffs, Mr. Trump said Canada discriminated against the U.S. by retaliating against his national security tariffs on autos. He also claimed that Canadian provinces had restricted sales of U.S. alcoholic beverages in response to his emergency tariffs last year. Yet U.S. distillers begged Mr. Trump to hold off on his Section 338 tariffs. They know the longer Canada locks out American booze, the tougher it will be to regain market share. The president also cited long-standing grievances over how Canada treats U.S. dairy. Press reports say the Trump team raised other issues during recent negotiations, including Canada's treatment of U.S. tech companies and digital taxes. Most of these issues could have been addressed as part of a renegotiation of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. But Mr. Trump doesn't want to update the deal. He wants to rewrite it unilaterally. As Mr. Kerry noted Saturday, the president has contrived an array of pretexts, from fentanyl trafficking to trade deficits to bludgeon Canada with tariffs. Mr. Trump's complaint about the U.S. trade deficit with Canada is particularly ironic, since the latter owes entirely to imports of heavy crude oil that is especially well-suited for U.S. refineries. Exclude Canadian oil, and the U.S. would have a trade surplus. But U.S. refineries would also operate at lower capacity. In any event, last week the two sides were close to an agreement that would reduce the U.S. auto tariffs on Canada to 15%, the same rate as South Korea and Japan, from 25%, and on steel and aluminum to 25% from 50%. These tariff reductions would help U.S. manufacturers, which have integrated cross-border supply chains. Prices for steel and aluminum mill products have surged 22.5% and 40.5% respectively over the past year. General Motors last month projected a $2.5 billion to $3.5 billion hit this year from tariffs. U.S. automakers have been lobbying the administration to reach a truce with Canada. Mr. Carney said Saturday that a major reason the deal blew up is that the Trump team refused to ease tariffs on heavy and medium duty trucks, including those made at Ford's plant in Ontario. Why is Mr. Trump punishing Ford, America's largest auto producer? Mr. Trump's latest round of border taxes will hit an array of consumer goods, construction materials, and manufacturing components. Republicans are already getting pounded on the campaign trail over his tariffs and inflation. One reason for Mr. Trump's frigid approval rating is that voters believe Mr. Trump is waging blunderbuss wars without a strategy. And on trade, they're right. AOC's crazy economic theory lives on. Government can print money, so spending has no consequences. How'd that go during the pandemic? By Alicia Finley. Remember modern monetary theory? This was the crazy economic view that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez helped popularize during Woke One. It held that U.S. needn't worry about deficits because the government could print money. Politicians could spend with abandon, and if inflation rose, Congress could subdue it by raising taxes. Stephanie Kelton, an economist who provided the intellectual imprimatur for modern monetary theory, MMT, thanked Ms. Ocasio-Cortez for bringing this radical idea into the mainstream. People immediately probably started Googling modern monetary theory to find out what she was referring to. The national debt is nothing to fear, Ms. Kelton told CNN in 2019. What should scare Americans is allowing misunderstandings and fear-mongering about the national debt to prevent us from taking bold action to deal with the urgent threat of climate change. This theory was central to the left's pitch for financing the Green New Deal, Medicare for All, and other costly ambitions. Modern monetary theory must be a larger part of our conversation, Ms. Ocasio-Cortez said. And so it was during the pandemic, until runaway inflation came and the Federal Reserve had to raise interest rates. Now the liberal intelligentsia and press, who egged on the experiment in modern monetary theory, are raising alarms about the growing debt and increasing yields on long-term treasury bonds. Yet, listen close, and you'll notice MMT still undergirds Democrats' economic agenda, even if they have retired the term. Step 1, spend without restraint. 2, lean on the Fed to monetize the debt. 3, hike taxes. 4, when economic inequality increases and growth slows, spend more. This more or less tracks what the government did during the pandemic, and now the left wants to repeat the failed experiment on an even larger scale. Call it woke to economics. Lest anyone forget how the U.S. got persistent inflation and a $40 trillion debt. First, Congress undertook a multi-trillion dollar spending binge during the pandemic that showered people with money. The Fed accommodated the spending by keeping interest rates near zero and purchasing treasuries. The latter had the effect of pushing down yields on long-dated bonds and U.S. borrowing cost while driving up asset prices, including for housing. Result, investors piled into riskier assets, crypto, special purpose acquisition companies, meme stocks, while Congress, businesses, and consumers piled on debt. Borrowing was cheap, so why not? Many Americans refinanced homes at ultra-low rates, which increased household liquidity and fueled consumption. After inflation surged, the Fed raised interest rates and began to shrink its balance sheet. Borrowing costs rose across the board, and suddenly running big deficits became much less affordable. Higher mortgage rates, which are tied to yields on long-term treasuries, also made homes less affordable for people who hadn't locked in low rates. In 2022, Democrats passed an enormous climate and health care bill, hilariously named the Inflation Reduction Act, with tax increases that they claimed would pay for sweetened Obamacare and Medicare prescription drug benefits and reduce the deficit. All of this spending cost multiples more than Democrats claimed. The Congressional Budget Office recently revised upward the Medicare prescription drug cost by some $700 billion over the next decade, largely because of higher than expected cost for the Act's enhanced benefits. Government makes something less expensive and people use more of it. Who would have thought? This week arrived a fall panic in the press about the upward march of U.S. debt and long-term treasury rates. Yes, yes. The result will be higher government borrowing cost, but this serves as a useful price signal to America's spendthrift political class. One reason for rising long-term rates may be that Fed Chairman Kevin Warsh has signaled that he doesn't plan to enable Washington's out-of-control spending by monetizing the U.S. debt, as his predecessors did. He wants no part of MMT. Enter the left's household remedy, hike taxes. Senator Bernie Sanders and his socialist acolytes have promoted a 5% annual wealth tax on billionaires. This would generate only $2.3 trillion over a decade, about as much as this year's deficits. Even if the government were to confiscate all the wealth of American billionaires, that would only raise $8.4 trillion. This wealth seizure would bring U.S. gross debt back to where it was in the spring of 2023. Forget paying for Mr. Sanders' Medicare for All proposal. Estimated cost, $34 trillion over 10 years. How about Ms. Ocasio-Cortez's proposal to raise the top marginal rate to 70% on incomes over $10 million? That would raise only about $300 billion over 10 years. Ms. Ocasio-Cortez is tiptoeing back from some of her earlier radical social positions, like defunding the police. But she and other progressives continue to promote the woke economic idea that raiding the rich can pay for their wildest spending dreams. What will it take for them to wake up? You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the editorial page, Trump's Iran credibility problem. Will he really follow through on his new economic threats? After 6 months of war with Iran, President Trump has a credibility problem. His blustering threats, alternating with claims of imminent peace and victory, are doubted by friends and foe. Will his new threat this week on Truth Social of the most crushing economic operation ever taken against any country be different? By now, the world will have to see it to believe it. No president has yet climbed the Iran sanctions ladder with China, moving the isolated teapot refineries that buy Iran's oil to the Chinese state-owned enterprises that support them. Nor has any president given Dubai an ultimatum to shut down Iran's illicit financial network and meant it. Any country that allows its financial institutions, businesses, airports, or government entities to provide any type of lifeline to Iran will itself face tremendous economic consequences, Mr. Trump wrote Wednesday. Oil smuggling, swap lines, cash transfers, exchange houses, ship registries, front companies, it all needs to stop now. You know who you are. They do, which may be why the United Arab Emirates preempted Mr. Trump with its announcement on Tuesday. All trade, commercial exchanges, and financial transactions with Iran have been halted until further notice. The question is whether all of this is a headline or a policy. Only the latter, which Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says he'll soon lay out, would give Tehran reason to fear. While Iran admits the U.S. blockade has driven its oil exports to near zero, Dubai-Iran trade never leaves the Persian Gulf. The U.S. Navy doesn't touch it. If that trade is now ending, this could be even more significant than the U.S. embargo, writes the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Mayed Maliki, who led the U.S. Treasury's Iran sanctions campaign until last year. Iran can't replace Dubai and the UAE, on which the regime depends for as much as 80% of its foreign currency inflows and about a third of its imports, plus payment intermediaries and sanctions evasion infrastructure. Mr. Maliki calls Dubai Iran's window to the world economy. Its daily direct flights, large Iranian diaspora, and unique financial ecosystem allow the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps to procure goods and repatriate revenue. It is no small ask of the Emiratis to cut off their dangerous and much larger neighbor, especially when the U.S. hasn't been able to protect them fully from Iran or restore free passage in the Strait of Hormuz. The UAE, America's best Gulf ally during the war, may also fear that a financial crackdown could spark capital flight from Russia and others. If Mr. Trump acts on his word, the Emiratis have far more to fear from secondary U.S. sanctions. The test will lie in what happens to Dubai's Iran-linked exchange houses, money service businesses, trade companies, and beneficial ownership networks, as well as the movement of cash and high-value goods. Will flights be scrutinized for bulk cash and gold smuggling? A halt to gasoline and refined product exports to Iran would be felt immediately. In the day since Mr. Trump's announcement, the value of Iran's currency has fallen significantly, exceeding 1.9 million rials to the dollar. Nearly all of the regime's economy is dependent on the UAE network. The Iranian dissident journalist Mojtabab Pormozin says, transactions run through intermediaries who are often children or relatives of Revolutionary Guard or intelligence ministry figures, he adds. There's more to be said about Iran's networks in Turkey, Iraq, Qatar, and Pakistan, as well as in crypto. But the key is that trade cutoffs, unlike sanctions, are felt immediately. Iran may lash out militarily in response, targeting Gulf energy again, and the U.S. will have to be ready with a firm response. We are going to collapse this regime, Mr. Besant said Thursday. Economic pressure can make survival more difficult for the regime, but it will take more resolve and consistency than Mr. Trump has shown in the past 6 months. Letters to the editor. Head Start's future shouldn't ignore its past. Regarding your editorial, A Welcome Restart for Head Start, August 11th, Washington shouldn't tell every community exactly how to serve its children. A federal requirement that consumes a teacher's time without improving a child's day should have to justify itself. I agree with the goal of your editorial and disagree with the verdict. There are different arguments which federal requirements earn their keep and whether Head Start itself is worth saving. The first debate is overdue. The second isn't supported by the evidence. Head Start is a national network with local control. Every program tailors its services to its community, guided by parents who have real authority over how federal dollars are spent. Requirements have accumulated, and not all still earn their place. Head Start should keep revising how it operates. But that conversation should rest on the complete record. Decades of studies have found that Head Start raises high school completion and college enrollment and improved earnings in adulthood. Children who attend Head Start are more likely to graduate and secure stable employment and less likely to enter foster care. Not every study is glowing. Some find large benefits, some modest ones. That is what a real evidence base looks like. Your editorial also points to the fade-out finding from the Head Start Impact Study. Early test scores gains diminished by elementary school. That's true, but routinely misunderstood. That study often compared Head Start children with those in other preschool programs, not children receiving no early education. Third grade isn't the finish line. A test score at 8 years old isn't a verdict on life at 18. A child whose hearing loss is caught at 4 does not need speech therapy at 8. A parent with reliable child care can finish a credential or hold a shift. Those are outcomes too. We should review the standards and change what doesn't work. But we must do it with the whole record in front of us and with a picture of the child on the other end of every requirement. From Jasmina Vinci, Executive Director, National Head Start Association, Alexandra, Virginia. New topic, a law for Zoran Mandani. Regarding Richard B. McKenzie's It's Hard to Tax Things That Move, it is worth recalling former Citigroup chairman Walter Wriston's elegant framing of the phenomena, now called Wriston's Law. Capital will always go where it's welcome and stay where it's well treated. Capital is not just money, it's also talent and ideas. They, too, will go where they're welcome and stay where they are well treated. Zoran Mandani and others seeking to tax the rich should keep Wriston's Law on their desks and smartphones so they have a daily reminder. From Robert C. Atkinson, Sparta, New Jersey. The Pepper and Salt cartoon shows an office where the secretary rather sternly is looking at her boss at the doorway. And he says, "If you feel inclined to tell me what a great job I'm doing, I'll be in my office." You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the August 24th issue of the Wall Street Journal. We read from the Wall Street Journal every Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. Your reader has been Corrine. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day or evening.